If you're looking to experience more pleasure in your life and a deeper level of connection with yourself and or your intimate partners in 2023, let's work together. Hello, I'm Stacey O, maitre d' of Finger Food Podcast and Holistic Sexuality Coach. You can apply to work with me by visiting my website, www.stacyogorman.com, or by clicking the link on this podcast bio. Welcome to Finger Food. I'm your maitre d', Stacey O, and I'm here to serve you intimate conversations around sexuality and pleasure. On the menu is a selection of heart-to-hearts with people who vulnerably share their stories, insights, and perspectives. This podcast is about sex and so much more. We explore connection, letting go of judgment, and accepting ourselves exactly as we are. Let's dine. In this episode, I chat to Brady Polkinghorn. Brady is the director of the Kindness Institute, a youth development charity based in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, New Zealand. He loves the blend of mindfulness, te ao Māori, and supporting youth mental health through his kaupapa. Outside of his work, Brady loves nerding out on mindfulness, self-inquiry, and meditation. He's a self-proclaimed rookie surfer, decent trail runner, and budding script writer. Mostly, he loves hanging out with his family and friends for nourishing kōrero. For him, it's connection above all else. Oh, and yeah, did I mention? He's my ex-husband. In this intimate conversation, we get into the nitty-gritty of our sexless marriage. We talk about sex therapy, masculinity, performance anxiety, losing identity in the relationship, finding love after divorce, and becoming dear friends after a breakup. It's great to have you here at the table. Let's get started.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, welcome, Brady.
Tēnā koe.
I am feeling like very excited to have you on the poddy, and I'm also feeling a little bit nervous because this feels rather vulnerable as obviously we used to be married. Yeah. And we're going to dissect that a little bit today. So welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an honor to be here, and the feeling is mutual. Excitement, bit of nerves, but yeah, ultimately grateful to be here.
Yay. All right. Well, let's just get straight into it. So first and foremost, where are you from and what's your family background?
Tēnā koe. Ko Waiau, ko Moihau te Maunga, ko Waiho te Awa, ko Tikapa te Moana, ko Hauraki te Whenua, ko Tainui te Waka, huiri tēnei Ngāti Tamatera. Aroha mai. Nō Tāmaki Makaurau ahau, kei Grey Lynn tāku kāinga, ko Brady tōku ingoa. So yeah, my name's Brady. Thank you for the introduction. I'm from Auckland originally, born and raised in Mount Albert in Sandringham, but I whakapapa to the Hauraki region and to Ngāti Tamatera. And so that's something I'm very big into at the moment, is the reclamation of my whakapapa and connecting more to my tūpuna, which is not something that I had growing up for various reasons, which we might dive into a bit later. I had a wonderful upbringing very loving parents. Is that the question we're doing?
Yeah. What's your family background? That's exactly what we're doing.
Okay, I just got on a roll.
And just quickly, just for the people that are listening that are not from New Zealand, can you just explain what a whakapapa is?
Yes. Yeah, so whakapapa is lineage. So essentially the ancestors that I come from, the land that my ancestors walked upon. Mm. And it's really one of the most essential tenets or sort of values and philosophies in Te Ao Māori, the world of Māori, that we are a product of our ancestors, our tūpuna, and we're here because of what they've done. And so that's, yeah, very brief overview, but something I'm really passionate about and trying to connect to more and more.
Mm.
And it gives me a stronger sense of purpose and who I am. And it's a tricky journey. For me, it's starting with te reo Māori, so reclaiming the language of Māori. But it's ultimately fulfilling within that challenge. And, yeah, I think of, you know, my nana and her generation where te reo Māori was not allowed to be spoken, and they'd literally get hit with the cane at school if they spoke te reo. And now it feels like I've got kind of a duty to pick that up and really embody as much as possible.
Beautiful. Did you want to share anything about your family background? Or
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I have such fond memories of growing up. I was surrounded by loving parents, both in their different ways. My mum was very affectionate and validating and would express her love in various ways, which I think I probably passed on somewhat in our relationship, you know, just little notes and little ways of saying, hey, I love you. Whereas my dad was very few in terms of words, but his actions always spoke of love, which I can see now in hindsight. Mm. So yeah, grew up really like middle class kind of background, both really hardworking parents. I have two older brothers. The oldest is adopted, and both me and my middle brother are what we call miracle babies. So
you are a miracle baby. You're both miracle babies.
Thank you very much. I'd say I'm the biggest miracle because I was the last one to come. You're the greatest miracle.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Absolutely.
And yeah, within that, I would say that there was some, you know, in a bit of a trigger warning here, some pretty traumatic experiences through my older brother being quite violent within the family. So that definitely shaped the trajectory of our whānau. It's obviously had its individual impact on each of us in our own different ways. But I would say that I was ultimately really sheltered from that. I think my parents and my middle brother really put a lot of emphasis on that, and I'm super grateful for them for doing that. But also through those quite gnarly experiences, it's shown me what true unconditional love is, because I've seen my parents exhibit that, especially towards my older brother, who sometimes, a lot of the time, isn't very lovable, you know. So to see their commitment to constantly being there for him, supporting him, regardless of some of the crazy shit that he's done, is just, to me, the most tangible, apparent version of love that I can think of and I've seen. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I guess in terms of the rest of my background, went to a public primary school, loved it, went to private, intermediate and high school, didn't love it as much, but it set me up wonderfully well because I now have an epic group of friends that we've been friends since we were 12, you know, for some of us. So it's those connections that I really value and definitely don't underestimate.
Yeah,
since then, a lot of my 20s onwards was indirectly trying to find some purpose. And it's gone in so many different ways, as you know, through 10 years working in advertising, studying advertising at university, thinking that was the one, realizing pretty early on that it's not, but just feeling stuck in that, to, more recently where I've connected with a kaupapa and a job that really fulfills me, makes me feel like I'm contributing to something bigger than myself. And that's sort of me in a nutshell, really.
Amazing. And in terms of, do you feel like talking to your parents, are they still together? Are they not still together? Any of that?
Yeah.
Obviously, I know.
Yeah, you know.
But if that feels comfortable to share.
Absolutely, yeah. So my parents split when I was about 12 years old. They were married for 26 years before that. There was a lot of tension, obviously, through things with my older brother, but just relationship things. And I think for me and my middle brother, when it happened, it was almost like, oh, okay, that's a relief. It felt better for everyone mm-hmm. that that was the case. My mum, not long after, started to see women. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting. You know, there was a woman hanging out and I was just like, oh, that's one of mum's friends, and started to realize, oh, she's hanging out a lot more. And then, yeah, my mum sort of told me and my brother that, you know, she's seeing this woman and is now attracted to women. And I remember crying at that point when she told me, but I wasn't sad. And because I was so young, I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm crying. Like, I'm actually really happy for you. And it was, it sort of stuck with me of an interesting, really early example of just how my body was expressing without much thought to it. And I remember my Nana saying at the time, you know, she's of a generation that maybe would have been less accepting of gay couples or lesbian women. And her phrase, I think, just summed it up so well. It's like, if you're happy, then I'm happy. Yeah, that stuck with me as well. And so, yeah, they're both now married to their respective partners, both seem really happy with who they are and where they are. And it's, again, really amazing to me to see how they've stuck together to support my older brother and kept that connection, which is based on support, alive. And actually has inspired me a lot with our relationship post breakup and divorce.
Beautiful. That's so incredible. They're such an inspiration. That's been, I mean, I cannot even imagine, begin to imagine what that journey would have been like with them, through with your older brother. And it's hectic.
Yeah, it definitely has been at times, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, next. What are your pronouns and what do they mean to you?
My pronouns are he, him. And it's something I've been reflecting on only recently. Quite honestly, I don't think even 4 or 5 years ago it would have even been in my sphere of awareness of pronouns, what they mean, the importance of them. But through my mahi with the Kindness Institute, we support rangatahi with mental well-being and hauora tools, as you know. And through that, we often support young people who may be transitioning or discovering their own sexuality and identity and their place in the world. And seeing that and observing their bravery and courage through that journey is really the point that I reflect on. And coming back to that point of importance, knowing how important it is for them to have that really clear point of identification to say, yeah, this is who I am and I'm not that anymore if they are transitioning. Whereas before I'd say, oh, it's, yeah, I present as a male and end of story.
Yeah.
But I now understand it's so much more nuanced than that. And I love just how much kōrero there is around it and what it means to me as a place of learning still, always. Like, I don't have a clear answer on what it means for me personally. I would say it folds into the conversation around masculinity and femininity that, you know, I only discovered through our journey of how we might navigate our relationship. And just thinking, well, masculinity is for men and femininity is for women. And finding it so confronting to figure out or hear that, you know, there's other interpretations of that. And it's not this really clear cut black and white thing. You know, there's movement through it and there's a spectrum and we all align at different points on that spectrum and move along that spectrum as well. They're not definite or constant. And so, yeah, I'm enjoying that learning process and that's it, I think.
Oh, that was a really strong answer.
That was one of the on the fly ones, I think.
Yeah, that was really, really, yeah, insightful and, yeah, beautiful to hear your experiences with working with the rangatahi, the kids around their journeys with transitioning and noticing that it's a bigger piece than just feeling like, well, I'm a man and that's how it is and that's what I've been taught. And it's like, yeah, as you say, like a nuance to an awareness of other people's experiences as opposed to just your own. I think that was a really beautiful, eloquent description of that. So thank you.
Nga mihi.
All right. And what is your sexual orientation in this moment, Brady Pockinghorn?
Currently heterosexual and really enjoying it at the moment, I would say. Definitely not something I've always enjoyed in terms of defining it as being attracted to the opposite sex.
Mm.
Yeah, I think for me it's always been a lot deeper than just the sexual connection with women. Like I feel myself really drawn to the female energy. You can probably relate. Like I think when we first got together, even before that, when we were just friends in London and I'd constantly just be hanging out with like you and all of the lady friends, you know?
Yes.
And just would love it and feel so comfortable and at ease and like I belonged in that space, which can be interpreted in so many different ways. But I reflect back on when I was at primary school, I had a lot of friends who were girls. And then through intermediate and high school, I started to get really intimidated by the opposite sex, by women, because there suddenly became this expectation of attraction or potential attraction and thinking, oh, what's changed from just being friends? Like, maybe I like them. Maybe they're like me. What do I do? What's sex? How does that happen? It's all so fucking scary. I don't even want to go near it.
It's a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
It's a clusterfuck.
Sort of like the 40-year-old virgin, but, you know, the 13-year-old virgin. Just going, yes. What is this? And so it meant over that time I sort of struggled to navigate those female-based friendships, which I often lament about because I feel like I lost a lot of time and potential long-lasting relationships. It's not to say I don't have any. Like I'm very lucky to have some wonderful wahine connections from that time. But yeah, it is something that I think about in terms of what my sexual orientation means. And I guess the summary of that is it goes a lot further than just sex as an act.
Beautiful. I love that. Okay, so we're going to get into the real nitty gritty here.
The juicy bits.
Obviously, as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, we were once married. We are now divorced. We were married for 6 years. And, well, 5 years actually, and together for 6 years.
Correct.
I've obviously talked about this on various podcasts and it's been a huge part of my process and journey, sharing my journey with it quite publicly. And I would love to hear your version of events in terms of our sex life and how that was for you from the sort of very beginning to how it all unfolded and, yeah. Basically, your version of the events. Very interested in.
Yeah. Listen up.
All right.
I'm here to dispel all the lies.
You've got one shot, one opportunity.
No, I'm. You know, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
A lot to unpack. I don't know how long do we have.
I mean, keep it short and sweet and kind, you know?
No, I'm appreciative to have the opportunity to talk about how it was for me. So, e mihi ana ki a koe for that. Thank you. From the start, I think we had such a beautiful friendship that then led into, you know, some deeper, more meaningful feelings. But I think for me at the time, that friendship was just such a beacon of hope. You know, I'd just come out of a pretty hectic breakup and you were just so supportive during that time. And I think that just superseded any potential sexual attraction or spark in that sense. So for me, I'd always, in those early days, like if we were apart, I'd be longing for you, but not in a sexual sense.
Mm.
And it wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to see her and like rip her clothes off.
Mm.
It was, I can't wait to see her and be held.
Mm.
So I think that in hindsight was, I wouldn't say a warning bell because it was just so nourishing for me.
Mm.
But it was a sign that, you know, it was going to be an uphill battle for both of us when that connection wasn't there from the start, I don't think.
Mm.
Not to say I personally willed it to be there. You know, I was really like, like wanting this, but it wasn't like an innate thing. It was just like kind of, oh, I know that we should be doing this rather than it just happening naturally.
Mm. Mm.
So then I think as time progressed and, you know, we had the opportunity, it was sort of been together for a year and then it was like, oh, I can stay if we get married, piggyback off your passport. Thank you for that.
So you used me. Is that what you're saying?
100%. Yeah.
I've been used.
I think you actually proposed to me first. If we're...
I did. It's true.
Yeah. But that was like an interesting point because it was like our commitment to be together was obviously so strong, so much so that we went through like a shotgun wedding experience and all of that just so we could stay together. But not long after then it became really apparent like, oh, this is not working. You know, we just weren't having any penetrative sex, any sort of foreplay type elements were pretty quickly shut down from both sides, I think. And personally, this is getting quite intimate, I guess, that I struggled because often it would be painful for you if we did get to penetrative sex. And I started to get a response of, well, I don't want to hurt you.
Mm.
So it's, I don't want to try.
Mm.
That was essentially the sort of dead end road that I came to in my mind. It's like, well, this just isn't an enjoyable experience. I became fearful. And then I think the gulf sexually just grew from there.
Mm.
And I also didn't have the tools to navigate that personally.
Neither.
No.
Neither.
Mm.
Mm. Oh, my God. Yes, I so hear what you're saying. And especially to the point on like in the early stages of the relationship, like the sense of, perhaps I felt like I was your support and it also felt like you were my support, you know, and I feel like that was what drew us together. And I also feel like there was a deep sense of intimacy in like in our, like we were very like touchy feely and like I'd like, you know, I remember in the very early stages, like it was like horny in the sense of like if we were out in public, like I'd want to like hook up with you. But it was like as soon as it came to like penetrative sex, it felt wrong or something right from the beginning, I would say almost.
Yeah.
But then we were like, well, this is so, everything's so fucking good outside of that. So we just dismiss that and we just work with, and we try and work on that throughout it.
Yeah, that's bang on.
And then it feels like, yeah, I can totally, I mean, my journey was, it was really painful for me. And I think I wasn't really tuning in with my needs or what actually what I was wanting because I wasn't aware of what I wanted in my body. I felt very disconnected to my body at that stage. So it makes perfect sense that your reaction or your how you felt in that moment around me being like, oh, this is painful and you not wanting to hurt me. So then that putting like a massive barrier between doing it again and again and again, it makes perfect sense that you wouldn't want to hurt me and you wouldn't want to do that. And so there's this like, yeah.
In saying that, it makes it feel very one way, which it wasn't.
Mm.
That's one of the aspects.
Mm.
The other is that I already brought a lot of my own fear into our relationship, especially around sex, that my mind would just be overrun with negative thoughts. I can't do it. I'll come too quick. I'm no good at it. This Rolodex of harmful thoughts to myself. So it was almost like a get out of jail free card, like to lean on, oh, well, this is too sore for you, so let's just not. Because in my mind it would be like, yeah, good, you've just dodged a potentially shameful experience. You've missed this potentially like hurtful thing. So good job. You know, that's the shame talking and the fear,
yes,
sort of being like, yeah, don't do it, man. It's going to end badly like all of those other times.
Oh.
And I can see that now. But again, at the time, I didn't have any awareness of what to do with those thoughts, that none of them were true, that I was just stuck in my own mind, and how much that impacted our relationship, especially sexually, is something that I've reflected on a lot since. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's so interesting to hear you say that, because I don't know if we've actually ever had that. We've never talked about it this deeply, I would say.
No.
And I would say those thoughts were definitely going through my mind as well. Like, I'm no good at this. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Sex has always been painful and shit. Like, I'm frigid. I don't even know if that's an appropriate word these days, but honestly, I feel like I was just like, this is just going to be shit, and no one was taking the lead in the party, and that was ultimately, I guess we were just both experiencing quite a similar situation, and both of us wanted someone to take the lead, and no one was doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how.
Yeah.
I literally didn't know how to take the lead, because I'd had very few experiences of doing that and it actually working. Or like working, you know, like going well.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, I don't even know what to do here. I'm just, that's just not, you know, let's read a book.
Yes.
Or watch Netflix again, or like whatever distraction piece was close enough. Just be like,
yes.
Or, you know, talk about the slugs that are eating the plant that are freaking you out.
Oh my God. The fucking slugs, man. I think I was slightly psychotic in those years.
No comment.
Oh my God. Okay, this is about you. This isn't about me. So.
This episode has been made with the support of Remind. Mindfulness has been one of the biggest tools to get me out of my head and into my body in the bedroom and beyond. It's helped me experience far more sensation and pleasure in my body than I thought possible. A moment of calm to be present with yourself. You just worked on your mental fitness. That wasn't too hard, was it? We all know what we need to do. Sometimes you just need a reminder. Remind creates tools for a mindful life. From courses to cushions, they service the contemporary practitioner. Practice Presence is their most renowned course, with 6 weeks of practice, exercises, and lessons to help you set up for success. And of course, their luxury Bodhi meditation cushion, as seen in hot wellness mum Instagrams all over Auckland. This is a tangible tool that helps lift your hips and acts as a cuddle buddy on those lonely nights. Find Remind on Instagram at remind.nz. or visit their website, www.remind.nz.
So obviously at the end, nearing the end of our relationship, so just before we travelled for a year and we were leaving London, we ended up obviously realising we took a break, and then realising like, okay, we do want to work this out. Like, we're married, we love each other. It would be amazing if we could just get the sex element on lock, you know? So we ended up going to sex therapy first in London, and then while we were traveling online. What was your experience of that? And as we were sort of working through all the tools and the work, how was your experience of all of that? And how did you experience yourself? And yeah.
I found it so confronting. And shameful in two senses of the word. Like, I was filled with shame, and it felt like such a shame to be so close to this like fully formed, beautiful relationship, which it was in so many ways, but it really felt like, yeah, we just couldn't quite get there. And I took on a lot of that for being, you know, my responsibility, and because of me, like, this is why we're going through this, because I can't take the lead. I can't quieten my mind. I can't be better at sex, all of these things. But I also at the time remember feeling really proud of us and still do because we actually did it. Mm. You know, we not sex. But
just to clarify.
Yeah, just to be clear. One thing we didn't do. But we acknowledged that, yeah, there's something really special here and let's do our fucking best to try and make it work. And it felt like we did a lot, you know, from, as you said, the sex therapy in London to whilst we're traveling. Like I remember dialing in with Juliet Allen from the jungles of Laos or something, or Cambodia somewhere, and just being like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, why don't we just fuck?
I know. No.
But it was also... And I remember being somewhere in some dusty, shitty hostel in Laos and being like, you were like, okay, let's do our worksheet from Julia Allen, and we're in some kind of like raggedy ass tent. I was like,
Oh no.
It's like, nah, man, I don't know if I'm keen.
You can't be fucked doing the exercises in the shitty hostel.
Nah.
I hear that. I was like, okay, here we go.
Like we were like those diligent students, like committed to the studies, but like couldn't do any of the practical, you know? A plus students for the written exam.
Oh my God, yes.
When it came time to the actual practicum.
Mm-mm, which is so interesting because I usually thrive in the practicums and suck at the academics.
I'm about a C minus in both usually, so probably didn't bring much to the table there. I do feel like it was just intensely transformational for me, that whole journey. Like I literally wouldn't be where I am, doing what I'm doing, feeling the way I feel now, had we not done all of that.
Yeah.
It literally changed the trajectory of my life, which is fairly obvious to say because we're now divorced and all of those things. It's like, yeah, of course, bro. But I may not have learned these incredible tools that I now know that can help me self-regulate, that help me relax and calm myself and be myself and feel confident and all of those amazing things had we not gone through that process together. Because it was the incentive of trying to get a better sex life that made me do it. It was like the dangling carrot in front. If it was just up to me, I probably would have been like, oh, no, I can't be bothered sitting for this 20-minute practice. Like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
But it was like, you sit for this 20-minute practice, bro, and you do it every day because you need to figure this out. So, yeah, intense, confrontational, shameful, but also transformational.
Amazing. I love that. I love that. And I'm also just reflecting in this moment on like that decision that we made when we were starting our one-on-one stuff with Juliet. And we were just like, okay, we're going to sign up for this one-on-one coaching and it's either going to make us or break us, as you say. And are we okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're diving into. So we know that this is either going to be over or it's going to thrive.
Yeah.
I remember that moment.
For sure. Mm. I think I actually remember one earlier, like when we were seeing our therapist in London. And I think the question was something like, you know, what are you most scared of or something like that in terms of that particular situation? And I remember my response being like, that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it almost, I remember saying that and like choking up because it felt like at that point there was already an inevitability. But we still went for it, you know, we and that's credit to us, I think.
Yeah.
And back to that sort of transformational part, I think what was really pivotal was that we also went and did our own work. It wasn't just like, okay, well, we're going to see therapy and it's on both of us to turn up and talk about it in this one session. You know, I sort of went down the mindfulness meditation route. You got stuck into yoga and, you know, various other things. And I think that's such a key part of it,
Yeah.
Because we were obviously not, you know, meeting in the middle when it came to sex together. So we had to kind of figure out what our individual experiences were and individual blockages or challenges or traumas to really then come back together and go, okay. But I just don't think we had enough lead time on that personal development, self-inquiry aspect for each of us individually.
Yeah.
We came together probably too quickly, but that's all we knew. So
Yeah. Beautiful. That's such a good point on, like if we were just left to our own devices of the therapy just for ourselves, I don't think we would have got anywhere, because I felt really, I remember sitting down in that therapy room on the first day and she's like, okay, so what are your fantasies? And you were able to articulate your fantasies really well. And I was like, I don't know. I don't want to do this. This sucks. Like, never go to therapy again, Brady. Like, there's almost like you can use each other to almost like escape or feel bad about yourself if the other person is thriving within that or vice versa.
Yeah, and blame, you know, it's like, this is your problem, not mine.
Yes.
Or, dodging it together, as you said. Yeah, there's so many different ways to do it, whereas, that personal journey is just sort of on you, which makes it really hard.
Yeah, totally.
No doubt about it, but it has different outcomes, different benefits, I guess.
Yeah. Beautiful. So, the breakup. We were in Cambodia. It was, I mean, really dark time. I remember just feeling beside myself and just like feeling like hopeless and avoidant and not wanting to go into anything, but also knowing that I couldn't like live like we were living anymore. And I remember being in that hotel in Cambodia just before we were going to the the retreat and just feeling like a sense of hopelessness. And then obviously that unfolded to having the conversations and then ending things. What was your, I guess, experience of the breakup?
Intensely painful.
Mm.
Yeah. Probably still is my marker for emotional pain and sadness. And like really awkward because we were just sort of, you know, walking on eggshells around each other. It was sort of like the end is nigh, neither one knowing what to do about it.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just go to this yoga retreat center to volunteer and work, never mind the fact that we're like spiraling into divorce, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember the conversation in our shack that had recently been flooded with rainwater. And like two things come to mind was like, one, your strength and bravery to actually say it, say what you were feeling. And it was so needed because I didn't have that. I couldn't have said, hey, I think this is done. I was sort of like holding on for dear life. But it was also deeply hurtful. I took it really personally. I think it was some kind of statement around like, don't find me sexy or something like that, which I just really held on to and have held on to for quite some time since as sort of a construct of like, oh, okay, I'm not sexy. And that's not on you. That's this stuff that I've been working through and thankfully now feel very sexy.
You're fucking sexy. I regret ever saying that.
But I think it was just your way of articulating to say, here's a finite thing. And I needed to hear that in a way, because otherwise I would have been like, but what about, but we could try this thing and, we haven't done that. But it was like, okay, there's no moving on from here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the line in the sand and I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just remember that sort of final meeting that we had, which was like beautiful and fucking sad. And I feel like we just acknowledged it in such a good way. But then I remember I was biking back to my really subpar like gym that I was staying at. So weird, just down the road and just like wailing. Like, I'd never cried like that before, and it was really unsafe because I was on the road and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And, you know.
Sorry, to laugh.
No. It is. It's laughable. It's sort of like a Judd Apatow movie moment, you know? Like, oh, my God. And just being, yeah, in the depths of grief and sadness, following that for quite some time, feeling really lost, felt like my identity had been lost. I'd put so much into the construct of being a husband. And when that was taken away, not through force or by you, just when that wasn't there anymore, I felt really, yeah, lost. I didn't know who I was, what I was supposed to be doing. Yeah, it was just a pretty shit time overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a shit time.
Mm.
It was a shitty old time.
Yeah.
And okay, so firstly, I guess I just want to acknowledge that it was a really fucking shit time. And yeah, and that you definitely weren't alone in that. And I really hear you on the feeling of being lost and that being almost the reason why we were holding on for dear life for probably far too long, is because it is so scary to know what's on the other side of a breakup, especially one when you've gotten married so young, you've committed to each other so deeply. And yeah, just like acknowledging that pain that you felt. And yeah, that I can fully relate to that feeling of like, what? Who am I now? Like having a fucking identity crisis.
Big time.
Yeah.
And I was just, I couldn't stop worrying about you either. You know, it was like, I felt like that was just so ingrained in me. And then when it was like, oh, okay, no more. It's like, oh man, I hope she's okay. And because I knew that it was, you know, you were hurting too. It wasn't like this. Yeah, okay, later, bro.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I appreciate that acknowledgement as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amazing. So what would you have done differently upon reflection in the relationship?
It's a tricky question, eh?
Yeah, it is.
Because it rolled out exactly as it was meant to.
Yeah, but totally.
Communicate a lot more clearly a lot earlier. You know, I think we just spoke to it earlier in this podcast around, we were basically having the same experience in our heads, lots of fear, lots of shame. But as you said, we've only just talked about it now.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Whatever it is, 8 years later, since we were probably having those challenges. So definitely that, just the openness to talk about whatever's going on and not just what we think each other want to hear. You know, I think that's really integral in any part of relationship. But now in hindsight, especially for sex, would have definitely put more attention on self-inquiry, self-development, whatever you want to call that, self-work, because I think we both needed it so much. And like we said, we propped each other up, but then when one of us weren't available for that support, the other one fell down.
Yeah.
And we were so dependent on each other in that emotional sense.
Yeah.
Whereas we couldn't stand separately in our own strength and then come together and share that. So that would be a key thing. And just try to have more fun with sex in general, like take the pressure off it, God. Like holy shit.
The most intense elephant in the room that ever existed. And it's
just not even sitting on the bed, just like sitting on both of us, this like giant elephant.
Like holding us down, like suffocating us.
It was almost like every time it was like we're stepping into play the Wimbledon final or something, you know, there was this intense amount of pressure to perform or like make it this like earth shattering sexual experience where, you know, the heavens opened up and we orgasmed for 45 minutes.
And
that's it. We didn't try enough in a fun way.
Yeah. It's true. I like that.
And I remember thinking, when we were going through all that stuff, I think I even talked to the therapist about it that we went to see. It was like, I feel like I'm quite a fun, light person generally, you know? Like to have a laugh and that. But in the bedroom, I was just like the stiffest. That's a poor choice of word. Just like, you know, like, what do I do with my hands? And it's like, I just so disconnected from who I am and what I'm like and what I like and all of those things. So, yeah, those are three things I'd try and do earlier or if we've got another chance.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I fucking love that. And, okay, what has sex and relating been like for you post-marriage, post all of that, all of those shenanigans?
Tumultuous, I would say. Yeah. High highs, low lows.
Roller coaster.
Roller coaster for sure. One of those real intense American roller coasters, you know. I think, yeah, my first sexual experience was actually really since, you know, post our breakup and divorce was actually really enlivening because I quickly figured out like, oh no, I'm actually all right at this. Like, it's all good. Like you got some things to offer here, which for so long I just didn't think or feel. It was just like, you know, I even think there was a point where I was ready for a sexless marriage, like by choice. It was like, okay, this is just the future.
Totally.
We're just not going to be fucking.
I think we were like, oh, we want to have kids, so should we just like inject me somehow? Like, how do we do this without actually doing the act? And I remember thinking, we're actually having those conversations. This is fucked, but I could get down with it.
That's the thing.
Thank goodness we didn't do that. 100%. That was the mindset, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it was, okay, we want to have kids together. Yeah, how do we do that? Sex. Oh, that's not going to work.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So that was a really good experience for me. It's like, okay, yeah, can do sex, not bad at it. Where do we go from here? But I think, yeah, overall, like I've had some really great sexual experiences and partners since that time. If I was to unpack it, I'd probably say I've been more inclined to go for that form of relationship, like predominantly sexual over allowing myself to fall for someone or go deeper into the couple aspect of a relationship or however you want to phrase that. Kind of making up for lost time in a way. It's not to say I've been like this crazy rabbit getting around, far from it, but more like, okay, I really want to focus on this part. And if I find someone I really love hanging out with, great. If not, then kete pai, you know, it's all good. But in saying that, yeah, I've been seeing someone recently who's amazing and I just feel really comfortable and open and curious with her, and it feels like a little bit of an awakening for me where I'm just experiencing things that I haven't before, and I'm just like so stoked on it. And it's almost like, oh, it's only took this long, but here I am and I'm really enjoying it. And I think I'm putting it down to two things when I'm like thinking about it. One is the abilities that I've been able to enhance through my mindfulness-based practices is that the comfort, a lot of it comes from the other person, but it's also me allowing that comfort to happen. And as we were talking about earlier, like getting out of my head and into my body and not listening to those thoughts of, oh, you're going to come too quick or you're not good at this. They still pop up, but I can quite easily now just let them go. And that's been a game changer.
Amazing.
The second thing I've been thinking about is like sexual compatibility. It's not a very sexy way to phrase it, but I've often thought about there's that inherent connection or that connection that we have with people that's based on they're really funny or we have similar interests or I actually learned so much from them because I didn't know about that or et cetera. And then there's like sexual attraction, but sexual attraction doesn't necessarily relate to sexual compatibility to me. It might be like, I think you're hot. And then we get in the bedroom and it's like, oh, this is like, whoa, this ain't working. Like, that's different. Or, you know, just one of those things where you're not feeling both in the same kind of rhythm with it.
Yes.
And so I'm really enjoying some sexual compatibility at the moment where it feels like the rhythm's really great and that's it.
Oh, fuck yes. Brady, I love what you're saying here. I love that essentially it's felt like a time for you where you've like what you were saying around when we separated in your relationships from now until where you are now with this lovely woman that you've just described. It sounds like quite similar. I can resonate in the sense of like, okay, focusing on the sexual act as being the priority, or focusing on the sexual connection as being a priority after not having it, or feeling like we didn't, because of the elephant in the room. It wasn't nurtured. It was forcefully nurtured. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just that feeling of like really wanting to hone in on that. I can relate to that. And also how beautiful that you feel like you've had these encounters where you have been nurturing that part of yourself, and that you feel like, actually, you know what? I fucking got it going on. And actually, it's a good time. Mm. Rather than, oh my God, I'm never going to have sex in my life and we're going to have to artificially inseminate whoever I'm with.
Yeah.
That's like pretty massive. And yeah, I guess just celebrating you and your journey and your bravery in relating beyond all of that. And yeah, it's just so beautiful and comforting to hear that, like, from such painful experiences, like, so much magic can unfold from there. And you do have to sit in the discomfort and pain of that for a while. And there's always going to be magic on the other end.
Preach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that acknowledgement. Mm. Yeah. Feel very grateful and lucky to be in this position, and just to be talking to you about it is a real honor and privilege.
Amazing. Mm. And it's so interesting as well, because I think that there would have probably been a time, I feel like there was a time maybe in the first like couple of years of when we were broken up, that like I don't think I could have heard you talking about another woman and felt like actually like genuinely celebratory for you. I'd have been like, oh, cool, you know, and I don't know how you would have felt about that. But I think in the last, we've been separated for 4 years now.
Yep.
And I would say it's been a journey of us getting to this point where we're able to talk about our sex lives and talk about our relationships and actually genuinely be like friendship support and hear each other on that. And for me, that's probably only been possible in the last like year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
How has that felt for you?
Yeah, no, I totally relate to that. That initial healing period was definitely needed.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to your Juliet Allen podcast, and I was driving while I was listening to it, and I think you were recounting the story we just talked about earlier around the breakup in Cambodia, and I started crying. And it wasn't through sadness, it was through like, wow, like, look how much, like, how different I feel now compared to that time. Like, I could really easily cast my mind back to that moment, be like, oh my goodness, I feel so good now. Like, that's amazing. I'm so happy for myself.
Yeah.
But also for you as well, that you could express that and share your journey and ultimately, hopefully, in service to others of getting some kind of inspiration or maybe some hope or whatever comes from that. It definitely took time. Mm. And I think we were smart, or maybe intuitive is a better word, to not put pressure on that. I think we both knew we would eventually get there.
Yeah.
In terms of being really good friends and close and all of those amazing things, but we weren't putting a time box on it.
Yeah. Totally. I'm really proud of how we've navigated all of it, actually, and so grateful for this friendship that we have. It's so beautiful.
Me too.
I love you.
Yeah, I love you too.
Okay. We're not going to keep harping on about the bloody marriage and the breakup and all of that shenanigans.
Enough of that.
I would really like to ask you, with all of the wisdom that you have now based on the entirety of your life experience, through your parents' breakup to moving to London to the things with your brother to our relationship to how you're relating now, all of it, what wisdom do you have that you would tell your younger self?
The old time travel question. I would probably say learn how to listen to your heart.
Mm.
And I know my younger self would be like, what the fuck does that mean? So the explanation to go with it would be do as much as you can, put as much effort and time into figuring out how to listen to your heart. I'm not going to tell you how. That's for you to figure out. But that should be your focus, because when you have an open corded or with your nako, your heart, it will always lead you to where you should be. And if I knew that earlier, I feel like I could have trusted myself more. I could have fulfilled my potential a lot more along the way and ultimately just feel safe with myself a lot more than I have in the past.
Mm. Fuck yes, that is beautiful. Oh, all right. Finally, last question.
Mm-hmm.
Most important question.
Mm-hmm.
Brady Polkinghorne, what is your favorite finger food?
Maybe the hardest question of them all today.
It's a hard one.
I would go for a thali, classic Indian.
Ooh.
Or Nepalese.
Ooh,
thali.
Yes to this.
Might seem a little bit off brief.
Not off brief at all. It's whatever your heart desires. Listen, follow your heart.
You got to actually eat it with your fingers.
One must.
So if anything, it's very on brief.
It's very on brief.
And just delicious and great options. You know, you've got so many different little morsels to choose from. Good times eating with your hand, being a little bit more present with your meal.
Mm.
Mm. Yes, please.
Divine, divine. Yes to a thali. I wish we had it on set. That should be my thing, actually. You tell me your favorite finger food and I bring it on set. Sorry about that.
That's all right. You might get like curry and chutneys all over the microphone.
It's not ideal.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. Brady, thank you so much for your time and your vulnerability and for just sharing your heart's truth. And yeah, this has been really beautiful and I feel emotional and I feel touched and I feel honored and really grateful for you. So thank you.
Thanks to you too. Yeah, ka nui te mihi ki a koe e hoa. I really appreciate it. It's been amazing to share and yeah, just so proud of everything that you're doing and how you're living and just doing such amazing things. And it's been a pleasure.
Love you.
Love you too.
Thanks for dining with Finger Food. If you liked this conversation, you can tip your maitre d' by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing this podcast with your friends. If you want to find more of my podcasts, go to stacyogorman.com. Stay safe, stay sexy. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.